Okay, I wanted to, again, not speak too long and just share with you a little bit of, as we hit Ben Azmanim, just share with you a little Ben Azmanim message, some chizuk, maybe an approach towards Ben Azmanim. And in Mitzvah Hashem, we will take a very, very much needed break and a much needed opportunity to reset and rejuvenate and refresh, as they say, and then Mirtz Hashem come back after Pesach with a very, very strong sprint towards the finish. And as many Rabbanim will tell you, the yeshiva calendar and the yeshiva schedule is such that Chorev Zman is pretty much a five-month, I'll call it a five-month marathon. And and in this year, it's even perhaps even longer because we didn't have a real Ben Azmanim over Sukkot's time. So we're talking about a six-month marathon with its ups and downs, with its trials and tribulations. But it's one's test. It's one type of test of endurance and of making it and working day in, day out over a long period of time. Most of you in your in the schools that where you came from, you never have a period of time of more than about 8-9 weeks without a significant break. You'll start the year in September, then you'll have a significant break for Sukkot, then you'll have a couple of months of school, yeshiva, and then you'll have a significant winter break, and then you'll have a couple of more months, and you have a significant Pesach break, and then another couple of, you know, 6, 7, 8 weeks, and then you'll have a significant summer break. And here in yeshiva, it's not how the calendar works. The way the calendar works is Chorev Zman is a long 5 month plus stretch of you got 3 days off of Hanukkah, you know, but basically it's a marathon. And Baruch Hashem, you all accomplished very, very big things and special things. And I think we can all, don't do it, but we can all give ourselves a round of applause for a job, a marathon well done. Kaitzman is a bit of a different type of phenomena. Kaitzman is what I will call a sprint. Kaitzman, you're talking about a seven and a half week run where it's not so long, and basically it's a finite period of time, and you go ahead and you come and you say, okay, these are my missions, these are my goals, these are my masechtas, and you just like run full speed until you get to the finish line. So that's going to be that challenge, and again we'll talk about that going forward. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Ben Azmanim and Mahalach and Ben Azmanim, and use perhaps the themes of Chag HaPesach to get into that topic a little bit. So if there's any theme, we have a lot of things going on Pesach. A lot of themes going on Pesach. But when you look at how the Rambam formulates his Hilchos Pesach, it's not called Hilchos Pesach. It's called Hilchos Chametz Umatzah. And the overarching and dominant theme of Chag HaPesach is stay away from Chametz and embrace Matzah. And indeed, the Chag is called by the Torah and in our Tfilos, we call it Chag HaMatzos. It's not called Chag HaPesach. It's about staying away from Chametz and embracing matzah. And if you look at the Gemaras in Maseches Pesachim, that Mirtzah Hashem we will finish in less than a week in the Daf Yomi, you'll notice that the Gemara plays off chametz and matzah. And the Gemara tells us, for example, on Daf Lamed, hey, what kind of grains are kosher for mitzvahs matzah? And the Gemara tells us the only type of grain that's kosher for mitzvahs matzah is grains that are boli de chimutz. It has to have potential for chametz. If it doesn't have potential for chametz, it's not good for matzah. So, for example, we assume that rice and millet are not bali de chimutz. They're not chametz. And memela, if you go ahead and make rice matzah, it's no good. It's not good. Matzah has to be that which is potential chametz. Only chametz is minei dagan. And by the same token, the only thing that you can violate an iser kares for eating, if it's chametz, is that which could be used for matzah. So if it cannot be used for matzah, then it cannot be full bona fide chametz. What that means is matzah and chametz are really two sides of the same coin. They're fundamentally the same. The same exact ingredients are chametz and matzah. This is not just true in terms of the chefza, but the Gemara tells us that women has a question. Are women chayavos in the mitzvah of matzah? And perhaps they're not chayavos because after all, matzah is a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. And after a detailed shakla v'tariyah, the Gemara tells us yes, of course, women are chayavos in matzah because they have an iser chametz. And kol sheyeshno bebal tocha chametz, yeshno bekumechol matzah. You cannot have. It is impossible to bifurcate an iser chametz from a mitzvah matzah. You cannot have one without the other. The two go hand in hand. There's no such thing as hilchos chametz without a hilchos matzah, and therefore nashim are equally chayavos in matzah, even though it's a mitzvah seishes man grama, because they have an iser chametz. So chametz and matzah are essentially the same thing. There's no difference, except for one thing. The only difference between chametz and matzah is time. Is when you have a dough, that dough right now can become matzah, or it can become chametz. And if you've ever gone to bake matzos, you'll notice that chimutz only sets in and can only happen. And the reason we have these things called 18-minute matzos is because chimutz can only set in when the dough is left alone, when it's left to rise. When it's left to lie fallow, that is when chimutz can take place. But as long as the dough is being worked, as long as the dough is being processed, is being kneaded, so then it cannot become chametz. So we're makpid with 18-minute matzos not to let even 18 minutes pass. But that's the fundamental difference. 18 minutes where this dough is just left to sit, then it becomes chametz. So we're going to go ahead and from the time we put in the water till the time we bake it, it's finished baked, less than 18 minutes. We're machmir for that. But fundamentally, if you're kneading the dough all day long and you're working and processing the dough all day long, there is no chimus. What creates chimus is when the dough sits and nothing happens to it. Then it starts to get puffy. Then it starts to lose its rigidity, lose its leanness, its sharpness, its core functionality, and it becomes chimutz. And perhaps that is a very, very good mashal to, I'll call it the dangers of ben hazman. Because all zman long, we are working ourselves. We're busy. Our schedule is busy. Our schedule is occupied, and we're very focused and perhaps even fixated on the agenda of working ourselves. And then you hit something called Ben Hazman. And Ben Hazman now is a 3-week period where there is no schedule. There is no formal daily learning. There is no formalities in your day. And it becomes the time where either you can keep a sense of work, a sense of process, a sense of development and focus, or it can kind of lie fallow. And when it has that potential to lie fallow, that is when that sense of chimutz comes in. So step number one is, I would tell you, critically important, is that the next 3 weeks I am not advocating at all sitting and putting in your 10, 11, 12 hours a day of learning. Yes, it's true that when the Chazon Ish was asked by Talmidim, how much should they be learning during Ben Hazmanim? He said, yes, I definitely think you should be cutting down your schedule. You should be taking it easy and limit yourself to 10, 11 hours a day. I'm not suggesting we do that, but I am suggesting wherever you are, in your, whatever you're holding, but certainly, 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 and it should be a priority in your lives, for the rest of your lives, but this is going to be your test, is 3 minyanim a day should be the axis upon which your day revolves. There's no such thing as, oh, ben hazmanim, and therefore I can sleep later, or whatever. No. 3 minyanim a day should certainly be an axis of what your day is. That is core and fundamental. Kvias itim la Torah. And that's the beauty, and I say it all the time, of yomis for those who do yomis, whether it's shnai mikra, whether it's daf yomi, whether it's mishabru yomi, whether it's taking on over ben hazmanim. An amud yomi, or a half an amud yomi. But to build for yourself, perhaps, a yomi schedule. Doesn't have to be dramatic. Doesn't have to be a lot of hours. But it should be hour or two. whereby this is your Kriyas Itin. You have a Yomi schedule, and you're going to go ahead 7 days a week, Bez Hashem, and accomplish some goals. Keep that your dough is not, Rachmana Litzlan, going to lie fallow. Many, many years ago, there was a horror story in this yeshiva. Horror story. Not a horror story, but a bad story. Of a young man who, and you guys, believe it or not, you guys are blessed. You don't feel it necessarily. But the fact that you're not traveling to Chutz Lartz. At least most of you are not traveling to Chutz Lartz. And you'll be staying in Eretz Yisrael. On the one hand, you know, it might be annoying. You might rather be home, and I understand that. But there are also, this grants you and gives you certain opportunities as well. Being in Eretz Yisrael for Yontif, and being, you know, still having a real Ritzifus in Avir de Eretz Yisrael is something that should not be taken lightly. This horror story that I speak about is a young man who, after his, and this yeshiva about 20 years ago, but I still remember it vividly. His plan was, after a very good, strong chorizma, he was going to go to Moras Shakolo for the summer. And he was going to come back Shana Bet, and he was one of those boys, you call him Super Stark. And he went back for his Ben Azmanim. And over the course of Ben Azmanim, he happened to develop a certain relationship with I won't call her necessarily an edelmadel, but a certain human being of the female persuasion. And they became close, apparently, over the course of a couple of weeks. And all of a sudden, a dramatic shift. Morasha Kol became Morasha Regular. And Shanabet became not Shanabet. And all of a sudden, like this slippery slope, to the point that, a Ben Azmanin created a certain loss of significant momentum that really changed the course of his life. That's dramatic. That's very dramatic. And I'm not suggesting Chas V'Shalom that will happen to anyone. But be sensitive to go ahead and use Ben Azman in a meaningful way. I will share with you that it's interesting how the Bnei HaYeshiva, when we speak about, you know, this, the next couple of weeks. So Bnei HaYeshiva referred to this period of time as Bein HaZman. It's an interesting formulation. In English, we would use the term vacation. In modern Hebrew, you use the term chofesh. That's not how the Bnei HaYeshiva refer to this period of time. They call it Bein HaZman, which is this day, if you think about an alumnus level, what does vacation mean? The word vacation means I vacate. And when I say I vacate, it's not just I'm physically leaving my location, but I am psychologically, emotionally leaving my current station. So I go to Mexico, I go to Florida, I leave, but I don't just leave physically, I leave mentally. I leave the rigors of day-to-day life, I vacate. Chofesh. I have a sense of freedom, of liberation from the toils of the day-to-day. It's not how the Bnei Yeshiva refer to it. They refer to it as Bein Hazmanim, which again, if you think about it on a lumdish level, it doesn't have an affirmative definition. It's not a thing. Yeah, it happens to be the space in between Chorizman and Kayizman. So it's a space. And it's not a vacation. It's not a chofesh. You never chofshi min ha-mitzvos. That's not what this chag, being a ben chorin. Ben chorin means you are cleaving to the Ribono Shalom. So again, a perspective on what Ben Azmanim is all about. Ben Azmanim is, yes, to take a break. And yes, don't learn 10 hours a day. Don't learn 12 hours. No. You should, though. Don't let yourself lie fallow. Don't let chimus set in, which means do things. The concept of, the vision of this like horror show of people lying on their bed on devices in the middle of the day, that's a horror movie to me. Like that, I can't even like fathom such a thing. Do things. You have an opportunity to see the country, to go places, to experience things. Baruch Hashem, looks like the country is opening up. Perhaps museums will open. Tehillim, see, go, do. Achieve. Accomplish. Don't just sit around. That would be a big mistake. That is perhaps what this period of time is all is all about. Another thought about chametz and matz. So there is a mitzvah this time of year of shmura matzah. Shmartem es hamatzos. And there's a major, major machlokes rishonim. From what point in time do we need shmira? From what point in time do we have to be extra vigilant in watching over the thing, the stuff, lest chimutz take place? So the most lenient view is mishas lisha va'elach. When you start to knead the dough, that's when you need shmira. What does lisha represent? When you add the water. So now you're sitting with an object, water and flour, that right now is staring you in the face and says, chimus can set in. So you better ushmartem es hamatzos. You better be careful. Because right now you're sitting with an object that is crying out, chametz is on the way. That's the most lenient view. The middle view is mishas tchina va'elach. Before you have applied the water, you have flour. No water yet. But flour is the substance that's going to produce the ikar ingredient of chametz and the ikar ingredient of matzah. When you have that ikar ingredient, so watch it, be careful lest water spill on it, and now chimutz can set in. That's your middle view. The most machmir view and the one that we try to follow is mishas ktsira va'elach. Is when the wheat is not yet flour, but it's been harvested. It's been severed from the ground. From that point on, it's not flour yet. It can't really become chametz. But now is when you need shmira. Mishas ktsira va'elach. And that's how we generally assume. We try to do shmura from ktsira va'elach. So again, b'derek drush. What is this Gemara telling us? What is this din telling us? So perhaps, no one says you need shmira before ktsira. That's for sure not. Why not? Because as long as the harvest, the wheat, is rooted in the earth, it's still growing. It still is dynamic. It still has capacity. It's yonek min hakarka, and it still has capacity to achieve, to grow, to become even more. Once it's severed from its place of growth, so now it can stagnate. Now it can become static. Now it loses its sense of dynamism, its sense of becoming. And from that point on, when stagnation can hit, that's when you need that sense of shmira. So again, perhaps b'derech mashal. Again, I like to say, and you'll hear this from me over and over as we hurtle towards the end of the year, yeshiva is not a place. It's an attitude. And wherever you are, whether it's in these hallowed halls, or on a basketball court, or in a restaurant, or in a family's home, or on a tiyul, wherever it might be, yeshiva is not a place, it's an attitude. When a person becomes even slightly uprooted from his place of yanika, even for a short period of time, that requires even greater vigilance. It requires even greater shmira to have your sense of whatever seder you have, your minyanim, your focus, your chevra, always aligning yourself with a GOC, always aligning yourself with an environment where you're still growing, where you're still achieving. Yes, perhaps not in your formal schedule, but a place where you're busy, a place where there's still growth. And indeed, Ben Azmanim is a fantastic test. And if you're honest with yourself, you'll see it as a test. How do I do when I'm not fully tethered to my schedule? How do I do when I don't see my Rebbein for a week or two? How am I operating when I don't have that sense of structure? It's a great, great test to see where you're at, what you've achieved, what you still have to achieve, and again, that sense of ushmartem es hamatzos, when there's a sense of tzira, when you're no longer yonek in the same daily and constant way, a sense of shmira, a sense of guarding, a sense of making sure I'm with the right people, in the right places, doing the right things. That's even more a focus as you hit your sense of Bein HaZman. And I want to close with a thought I shared with my shir yesterday, but I think it's worthy of sharing with the entire yeshiva. And that is a thought from this week's parsha, Parshas Vayikra. And as we reflect backwards and we focus forward, if you're reading the news and you're seeing what's going on, yes, Baruch Hashem, it seems b'li ayin hara that at least in Eretz Yisrael, we're moving. It seems into a better place in terms of Corona and in terms of direction and vaccines and perhaps even when you get back from Bein Hazmanim, at least what Rav Natanel tells me is if you have a yeshiva, an institution that's 90% plus either vaccinated or machlim or whatever is post-corona, plastics will come down. Yeah! Yeshivas will become fully, fully one, even though we're one anyway, but we're faking it, but we're one. And Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. You know, we should daven that we should still the path that we seem to be on should continue, and we should be zoche to have coronavirus in our rearview mirror. With that being said, however, I think it is appropriate again at the end of his zman to reflect a little bit, a moment or two, on the past year, and it's been a full year that we've been living under a cloud. And under a heaviness of abnormality. And there's no doubt in my mind, there should be no doubt in anyone's mind, that, again, a mamin b'Kadosh Baruch Hu does not believe things of global proportions are happenstance. Do not happen for a reason, do not happen because, for one reason or another, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants a certain type of reset. And yes, it would be a big mistake if when we are, Bez Hashem, past Corona, it's like, okay, just back to where we were 14 months ago. The things we're supposed to learn. There are takeaways we are supposed to have. And we will read in this week's parsha a number of psukim that tell us that with every single korban that we bring, al kol korbanecha takriv melach, you will sprinkle salt on every single korban. And then the Torah tells us that when it comes to karbanos, especially menachos, you're not allowed to smear the mincha in dvash. You can't smear dvash on, and yes, salt. And at first blush, that would seem counterintuitive. I would think that I should sweeten my karban, not salt my karban. And what is this iser of applying dvash and a mitzvah a bris melach, al kol karbanecha takriv melach? And perhaps the answer is, dvash, honey, is a very, very dominant taste. It's a powerful taste. It is so powerful that whatever you apply it to, whatever you put it on, it will mask the underlying food that you're eating. When you put a slather of honey on a piece of bread, the honey is the dominant flavor. That's how honey works. It's very powerful, very strong, and indeed very sweet. And the Torah says no. No honey on karbanos. Put salt on the karbanos. Salt is also a flavor, but its essential character is what salt does is it gets absorbed by that which you apply it to, and then it extracts the essence of the thing. I had the schus yesterday. Monday night was, I had to prepare dinner last night. So I went, I found a recipe. Found a recipe for something. The first thing they said to do is kosher salt. A lot of kosher salt on the meat. I said, why? Why do I need kosher salt? So the teretz was, because kosher salt, what it does is it draws out the essential flavors in the meat. It's not about salt. It's about being polite, pulling out the essential flavors of the meat. We do that when we salt meat for kashrus, to draw out the blood, but even for flavor, that's what salt does. It pulls out the essential flavor. The Torah tells us in Parashat Vayikra that when it comes to karbanos, you do not want to mask the essential essence of the karban. On the contrary, you don't want to hide it, you don't want to mask it under dvash. What you want to do is you want to draw out its essential flavors. You want to draw out the essential kedusha of the karban, and therefore bris melach. You salt. And I would tell you that as we look back at the past 12 months, and especially the past 6-7 months, so some of you might think erroneously that this was perhaps not a classic, real year in yeshiva. We didn't have the opportunity, perhaps, to travel around as much as we would have liked to go out to restaurants as much as we would have liked to see communities outside as much as we would have liked to. Perhaps we would have liked our parents to visit, our uncles and aunts to take us out to meals, our 15th cousin to invite us and our entire nightsayer out for dinner. Perhaps we might have missed out on some of those things. And therefore we feel, this year maybe was missing some core ingredients of a year in yeshiva. And I will tell you, 100% to the contrary. You had a special bracha in the past 5-6 months. Yes, you went through some quarantines. That wasn't the bracha. Yes, many of you got sick at some point. That wasn't the bracha. But the bracha of Corona, at least this year, a bracha, there's a silver lining. It was it gave you guys the opportunity to be more focused, to focus on the essentialities of yeshiva, of Talmud Torah, of growth, of yes, not going out as much, because that's the dvash. That's foreign. That's not essential. That's not what it's really, really all about. And when we as Rabbanim and as a Hanhala reflect on this year, it's definitely been tough. Definitely been tough on me. Definitely been tough on, you know, we all, from top to bottom, look forward to a Ben Azman. I can tell you that. But at the same time, I can also tell you, as I look around the room, and I'm looking at every single person here, the amount of growth, the amount of steiging, the amount of development that happened dafka this year, dafka because of COVID, enabled us, and believe me when I say it, to become better versions of ourselves than we would have had we not had COVID. And we don't want to have COVID. We want to get past, for sure. But don't think you missed out on anything. On the contrary, what you did is you had more salt, which allowed you to draw on your essence, to draw on your best, to be focused on what's the real karban, what it's really all about. And for that, you're very lucky. You're very lucky. And you had so far, B'li Ayin Hara, a wonderful, wonderful year. We've had a tremendous amount of Siyata Dishmaya. As I reflect on these 6 months, tremendous Siyata Dishmaya, how things developed and worked out. And we should. We should feel blessed. We should feel that we had tremendous, tremendous opportunities, and we seized those opportunities. And I will just part with a bracha, a birchas hedyot, that Bez Hashem, we should take full advantage of this period of Bein Hazman. We should take full advantage of Chag Pesach, Chag HaMatzos, Habo Aleinu Letova. Tap in to the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. Tap in to the Kedusha of the Chag. Tap into opportunities to spend Yontif with Rabbeim, which again, in a normal year, you will not have. And this year, Bezrat Hashem, many of you will have. And to have the opportunity to, again, refresh. Ushmartem es hamatzos. Do not allow yourself, Rachmana Litzlan, to lie fallow, but to go ahead and use this period as a period of rejuvenation, a period of relaxation, and a period that, Amir Hashem, you will work on yourself in a different way, so that when we get back after Yontif, we'll have that 7.5 week sprint where Amir Hashem will continue the tremendous growth that we've seen. And go mechayil achayil, accomplish many, many siyumim, accomplish many, many areas of growth. And I want to wish everyone a chag kosher v'sameach, and a beautiful Bein Hazmanim, and a beautiful Yontif. And we will see each other on Shabbos Kodesh and beyond. Have an excellent day. I will be